Ponytails. Read by Scribbler. Biblical Monsters by Horse Voice, Chapter 1. On December 14th, at 3:15 a.m, Adams woke me with a loud knock on my front door.
All right, I'm coming. I'll keep your hair on.
Put your boots on, he said when I answered. There's a biblical monster in my house. I said nothing, but did as he asked. If any part of my mind comprehended the ramifications of what he'd said, it assumed I'd misheard. I knew better than to drag my feet when Adams gave an order, but took a few seconds to grab a raincoat before following him.
Oh, bloody rain.
By the time I closed the door behind me, Adams had already marched halfway back to his house. So I hurried after, bracing against the blowing rain. I peripherally glimpsed the blinking points of the 7 kilometre and 10 kilometre beacons in the distance. Besides them, and the lights from our station's buildings, the universe was solid black. When I reached the house's foyer, Adams gestured towards the living room. It's in there, he said. Keep an eye on it. I'll be back when my weather report is done. He edged past me, and heedless of the storm, began marching toward the building that housed the generators and radio equipment. I hung up my coat and shuffled to the large open space that was 1/3 kitchen and 2/3 living room. My brain was still foggy, and I did not at first comprehend the pastel shape that lay sprawled on Adams' couch, unmoving except for rapid, shallow breaths. His use of the phrase, biblical monster, had been deliberate. If he had called our visitor a unicorn, he might not have reminded me of how wrong I was regarding certain touchy subjects that we had debated on several occasions. But he had kept his tone neutral. Though always one to point out when he was right, Adams was too mature to rub it in. Then again, perhaps he had used that particular phrase to avoid giving me incorrect information. I considered myself well-read, but was not aware of any mythology that spoke of unicorns with wings. The creature's shape consisted almost entirely of smooth curves. With some imagination, the legs, neck and torso might resemble those of a horse or deer, but this was only for lack of anything else to compare it with. None of the proportions matched those of either animal. It had a smaller torso and pelvic area, supported by short stocky legs, with an unobtrusive solid hoof at the end of each. A pattern of stars, one large and 5 small, had been dyed in the area on its flank. I suspected the 6 stars, each with 6 points, must have clinched the religious connection in Adams's mind. The head was something like a human's, albeit with an ungulate's ears, rather large eyes, and slightly cat-like snout. Its mane and tail, though now mussed and tangled, seemed to have once been cut and dyed. The creature was entirely covered in short hairs, which had been dyed a soft purple. Quite expertly, I thought, since not a single strand had been missed. A short, spiralled horn, which reminded me of a narwhal, protruded from the simian forehead, completing this bizarre image. Holding my breath to avoid disturbing the sleeping creature, I peered at the horn as close as I dared. The foremost strands of mane had fallen away from it, and its base disappeared into the ears of the coat, seemingly attached by no outside means. The bird-like wings, which connected to the body just below the shoulders, were folded tight against the creature's sides. I thought they might be vestigial, as they were far too small to lift their owner. I stepped back and leaned against Adams's kitchen table. For a second, I wondered why he'd not seemed to share my sense of wonder at this. Moreover, Why had he left me to watch the beast, which I assumed he knew nothing more about than I did? What would it do if it woke up? Would it be hostile? Then I remembered who I was dealing with. To Adams, his behaviour made sense. In his philosophy, there existed no shortage of creatures and spirits most people considered mythical. Besides, in his 24 years in this job, he had not missed giving a single weather report, and according to him, had never made an incorrect one. The arrival of an exotic animal, whose existence had always known, was not reason enough to disrupt this. He was the best lighthouse keeper I have ever met, as well as the worst biblical literist. "There are stories of dragons in almost every major culture," he had once said grandly. "The idea of them to have come from something from the earliest days of civilization, or perhaps just before." "People found dinosaur bones," I said. "They didn't know about fossilization back then, so they assumed the bones belonged to a living creature." At this, he had grown quiet, and I decided not to press the issue. Now, he no doubt considered the matter settled. If one mythical beast existed, there must be others.
"Is anybody ready?"
The voice came from the radio telephone in the corner of the kitchen. The circuit operator was asking which station wanted to give its weather report first. I hurried to turn the volume down, but was already too late. The corner of my eye caught a flicker of movement, and I jerked my head around just in time to see the creature's eyes open. I must have been the first thing it saw, for it made a sound along the lines of, "Ah!" as it scrambled to its hooves and tried to back away, only to fall off the couch and sprawl on the floor.
What are you?"
it said, as it awkwardly rose again. I could not believe my ears. When the creature's mouth moved, a woman's voice issued forth. I started backward, too shocked to respond.
Who are you?"
it said. Later, it occurred to me that this rephrasing was probably for the sake of politeness. For a long moment, the beast and I stared into one another's faces, each waiting for the other to make the first move. It kept one hoof half raised, as if ready to fight or flee. I tried to think of something appropriate to say, but given the situation's absurdity, I doubt I could have broken the ice at the best of times, let alone at 3:30 a.m. At last, it lowered its hoof and squinted its large eyes a bit.
Can you understand me?"
"Yes," I said. It was an unconscious response, and I suppressed an impulse to look around to see who had spoken.
"Oh!"
The creature smiled and brushed a few strands of mane from its face.
"Well, at least something's gone right."
She gave a sort of four-legged bow.
"I am Princess Twilight Sparkle."
"Of course you are." I'm not sure why I said this. I suppose the name rounded out the old ridiculous picture.
"Huh?"
Twilight said. I did not have a chance to explain myself, as at that moment the front door opened and Adams entered the house. Twilight opened her mouth as if to speak, then closed it and regarded him warily. He'd always been more imposing than me, with his grubby clothes, beard stubble, odd expression, and sometimes crusty demeanour. On more than one occasion, I find myself in the role of a good cop. Adams did not speak at first, but crossed the floor until he was an half step closer to Twilight than I was. An alarm sounded in my mind. I knew what was coming.
Hello,
Twilight said. Adams' only registration of surprise at her speaking was an extra blink and a slight twitch of his upper body. But he must not have found it too strange, since he responded right away.
"Are you a harbinger?"
A what?"
"Harbinger of the end times."
Twilight squinted one eye, raised the other's brow, tilted her head, and said, "He's wondering if you are here to warn us about the end of the world," I said. There was no sense trying to sugarcoat it. Though I'd never taken Adams' apocalyptic ideas seriously, I now wondered how much he'd actually been right about. Twilight's head tilting and eyebrow raising grew more acute, and she bit her lower lip a bit. I realised she was trying to think of a polite way to say no. She must not have known anything about Adam's vaunted end times, or else she would have replied right away, I thought. After a few seconds, Twilight's expression changed to that of a person desperately trying to make friends. A wide smile, betrayed by a worried creases around the eyes and forehead. Okay, I think you have me at a bit of a disadvantage. She picked over the words as she said them, as if she was afraid of setting us off. Don't take this the wrong way, but I have no idea what you guys even are. We're lighthouse keepers, Adam said. You guys have lighthouses? Twilight looked at the floor and tapped her head with a foreroof. So, assuming we don't have the same word for two different things, you must have advanced moral or ethical standards. I realized she was thinking out loud. The strangeness of a mythical beast having such human quirk was not lost on me. We know you're a unicorn, Adam said. Elkhorn, Twilight said, cutting him off. What? The crease on Adams's brow meant he was in no mood to be corrected. Winged unicorn. Twilight flexed her somewhat ruffled wings. If Adams cared about the distinction, he didn't show it. I got up about 40 minutes ago and found you laying unconscious on my doorstep. You were protected from the rain by the house's overhanging roof, but were exposed to the cold. I carried you inside and went to fetch my assistant. Adams was not always so impersonal. This manner was the same he used when writing in the station's log. I wondered if he would have the sense to forego an entry on this incident when it was all over. That's a relief. Twilight's worried expression softened a bit. I guess if you help me, She paused, abandoning her thought wherever it had been, mid-sentence. Well, thank you very much. It's our job, Adam said. I wondered why God would create a man like Adams, who spoke to a purple, unicorn-like creature in the same way he addressed any of the other people he had helped over the years. You're lucky you ended up here, I said. This time of year, at this time of night, there ain't a soul for 50 miles. It was barely an exaggeration. Welcome to Cook Point, by the way. You guys know about unicorns, even though I've never heard of... Twilight looked back and forth between Adams and I. How much do you know about unicorns, by the way? You're the first either of us has ever met, Adams said, and not everyone believes you exist. But while this was true, I wondered if Adams was deliberately withholding the true extent of the fact, or was simply being as brief as possible. In any case, I decided to interject before he could start talking biblically again. Before we go any further, I said, maybe you should tell us how you got here, from the beginning. Me first? Our guest said. Well, all right. The whoosh of a mighty gust came from outside, and the large double-pane window that looked out of the Vargas Bay creaked around the edges. Nothing was now visible in that direction, except the orange light from the boathouse down the hill. Twilight looked out of the window, and her hackles rose a bit. I imagine the scene must have been unnerving from her point of view, as she had no idea what our world looked like during the day. She turned back to us, got up on the couch, and sat upright, cat-like. She took a calming breath and began. I am Princess Twilight Sparkle, the most favored student of Princess Celestia, one of the 2 Diarchs of Equestria. She paused, regarded our faces, and frowned at what she saw there. For just over 3 years, I've been specializing in friendship-based magic. Twilight flinched as Adams crossed his arms, and his frown deepened. But that's not what brought me here. A long time ago, there lived a unicorn named Starswirl the Bearded. He was a genius, centuries ahead of his time. He invented or dramatically expanded disciplines like amniomorphics, weather control, and teleportation. In the big National Archive in Canterlot, that's our capital city, there's an entire wing dedicated to his work. A few months ago, I was given instructions for a spell that Starswirl had left unfinished. Using modern magic, I was able to complete it. This week, I got some personal time, so I decided to spend it looking into Star Swirl's more obscure works. I soon found that there were other spells he left unfinished, several, in fact. And since I'd gained much more powerful magic by completing one, I decided to try and finish these as well. I guess I should have asked Princess Celestia for advice first. I thought this one spell was supposed to allow me to walk through walls, but... She looked out of the window again, probably hoping for some sign of dawn. Now, I realize the instructions refer to the walls of reality. Writings in old Equus are sometimes weird that way. The first time I tried this, I messed the spell up, and it wasn't easy to set things right. This time, it worked too well, and when I realized what was going on, it was too dangerous to stop the casting. It was one of the most strenuous things I've ever done, and... She raised a hoof to her muzzle. Just a minute. She turned toward the nearby coffee table. It was bare, except for one of Edam's Bibles. It was not one of the fancier ones, just a softcover King James printed on thin paper. Twilight fixed her gaze on it, licked her lips, and gritted her teeth. For the second time that day, I could not believe my senses. There was a sound I'd never heard anything like before, which I can only describe as a shimmering in my ears. A wavering magenta glow surrounded both Twilight's horn and the book on the table. And as she concentrated, the book lifted off, pulled upward as if by a magician's string. In less than a second, Adams crossed the floor and seized the book from the air. He glared at Twilight, his eyes sparks of hellfire. Sorry. Twilight cringed and took a few steps backward, nearly falling off the couch's end. I didn't mean any harm. I've always liked books. I just wanted to see if my magic was coming back. For a moment, I wondered why a creature with such extraordinary powers would be afraid of a human. But it made more sense when I thought about it. If she had never met anyone like us before, she had no idea what we were capable of. Her shoulder only reached my waist, and the height difference might have been intimidating. Adams backed off, holding the Bible away from Twilight as if she might attack it. I suppressed a sigh of relief. Just a misunderstanding, I said, risking more trouble from my boss. You were casting the spell, and then what? Well, said Twilight, still keeping one eye on Adams. Just as I broke through, I must have blacked out from the unexpected strain. You know the rest. She regained a bit of her composure, standing to her full diminutive height. So, here I am, in an alien world. Or, I'm in your world, so I guess I'm the alien. A brief silence filled the air as we considered all this. Can you get back the same way? I said at last. Actually, it might be easier, since I'm familiar with where I'm going, and I've already had the nasty surprises. But... For the third time, Twilight looked out of the window in vain. Not in this weather. It needs to be clear and calm. Something to do with the electromagnetic status of the atmosphere. You might be in luck, I said. Every year about this time, we get a period of clear, calm weather, and it's due any day now. Forecast calls for it, Adams said. He sounded less than pleased. I assumed he did not want the living proof to leave us so soon. I do not know whether we should ask our guest to stay, but doubted we could prevent her from leaving if she wanted to. Listen, I was wondering, Twilight said. Earlier, you said not everyone believed in unicorns. As far as most people know, they're mythical, I said. Now I was using weasel word too. I neglected to tell her that most people meant everyone except Adams, and now me. That's really incredible. Twilight put an oof to her temple. It's kind of funny, really. I always thought alternative realities were just speculation, but here I am. And I guess there's no way of anticipating what you'll find in a completely different universe. I mean, there are books and lighthouses, but no unicorns or alicorns. And I guess there are no pegasi or earth ponies or dragons here either, huh? What do you know about dragons? Adams's interjection seemed to catch Twyla off guard, and she winced a little at the edge in his voice.
Well, I might have known a few.
She again picked her words carefully.
That's not a problem, I hope.
I got the feeling I was watching someone unknowingly commit suicide. There was no way Adams would look at the facts without certain prejudices. I couldn't remember what the scriptures had said about dragons, but I knew Adams's opinion. They were evil creatures. We have some duties to take care of, Adams said. Make yourself comfortable. We'll be back. He motioned for me to follow him and marched out the front door a little more quickly than usual. Excuse us for a moment, please, Twilight, I said, and hurried after him.
That was Biblical Monsters, Chapter 1. It was written by Horse Voice and read by Scribbler. Okay, thank you very much. I hope everybody enjoyed that. I'm a little later getting this chapter out than I thought I would be because my microphone broke and I had to wait several days to get a new one from Amazon. But I have one now. All fixed, all sorted. And hopefully back to some kind of semi-regular... semi-regular update schedule. I'm talking very quietly at the moment because it's 12:15 and everybody's asleep apart from me. Yay, insomnia. Right, okay, I don't have that much to add now and I probably should shut up before somebody comes and bangs on the wall. So, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you tune in next time. Please give any suggestions for further fic readings in the comments below. Please tune in to my new radio show of fanfiction reading, fanfiction reviews and other fanfiction related things. It's on Sonic Radio Boom on Ponyville Live. It's 8 p.m. Saturdays UK time and 3 p.m. Saturdays Eastern Standard Time. Okay? Be lovely to each other and good night, everybody.